Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome to the AmeriChicks. Molly Vogt and Kim Monson. I'm Kim Monson.
I'm the other girl, Molly.
Yes, you are. And Woody is running the boards. Woody, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We are the AmeriChicks. And what that means is we are dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. We are lobbyists for the little guy. And we care about what's going on out there.
And also it means that we are American-loving chicks. So there you go. And so we are keeping our eyes on the process, and we encourage you to do the same thing, too. Obviously, there's a lot going on at the federal level, and we'll talk about some of that in the first segment. We're going to go through some current events. In the fourth segment, also, we'll be talking with the director of Center for Immigration Studies, Mark Krikorian. You've seen him probably on all the news channels, but he's a nationally recognized expert on immigration issues. And since we've got this whole DACA talk going on, it looks like a Ninth Circuit Court federal judge in California has just said, nope, we're not going to be able to get rid of DACA.
Of course, it's the Ninth Circuit.
So
yes,
we're going to talk about that, break that down with Mark. And then also, I'd like to really talk to Mark about what he thinks should be tied in with the DACA deal. What else do we really, really need to make sure that we're protecting our borders and protecting we the people? Is it a wall or is it something else? And then the second and third segment, we're going to talk to Victor Mitchell. He is a gubernatorial candidate here in Colorado. And yesterday, it was a really big deal. We were talking with Amy Oliver Cook about two Democrat gubernatorial candidates, Polis and Johnston, who want to raise our taxes by, I don't know, $44 billion
or
something like
that. Well,
actually
what it is, they want to fund renewables by 2040, and it's going to cost $45 billion.
$45 billion. Mm-hmm. So then I'm just saying, you're just going to raise our taxes. So connect the dots. Where are they going to get the money? So so we think it's important. Let's talk to all gubernatorial candidates that we're inviting everyone on. Anyone that'll come on, we want to know, what are your top issues?
And they've been
issues?
Reaching out to us, actually. And we're like, we made the decision then, okay, you know, everybody can come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like Kim said at the beginning, it's not right versus left. It's right versus wrong. So it doesn't matter if it's an R or a D or an L or whatever behind your name. We want to know, if you're running for office, what do you care about? What are your top issues? And what are your ideas for a solution? Because mm-hmm. that's what matters. It's not party politics. And and then quickly, can I tell you what's on my radar?
I'd love to hear what's on your radar, Molly Vogt.
Well, I love sunsets, Kimmy.
Yeah.
Not just watching them because they're beautiful, but sunsets of big government encroaching laws.
You're always thinking, aren't you? Oh, my gosh.
Get rid of those things. You know, when we put our founding fathers put the Constitution into place, its point is to limit the government, right? But every time Congress makes a law, it seems to be expanding government's power over us. And so there's one thing up Congress has taken a look at right now, and this is extending the warrantless surveillance on U.S. citizens that was put into place under the FISA Amendment Act. This is Section 702. And it allows our government to really go around the Fourth Amendment. They can watch us. They can listen to our information and really do mass surveillance without a warrant. I think they should have a warrant. There's a reason for that. It's to protect the innocent. Innocent until proven guilty. And the really interesting thing about this is that it's Senator Rand Paul, who is a Republican or Libertarian, Senator Wyden, who's a Democrat, and then you've got two congressmen, Representative Amash, I believe, Republican, and Representative Lofgren, who's a Democrat. So this is bipartisan support in both houses saying we are going to filibuster this unless we put some limits on protecting Fourth Amendment rights of Americans. I am very happy with that. It's bipartisan. The ACLU is backing these guys and the libertarian / conservative group Freedom Works. So I love that
it's
we've got all
spectrum,
these different groups
it?
Across the spectrum coming together to protect the people. It's not party politics, Kim. It's protecting we the people, regardless of our differences.
Well, that is very, very encouraging. And I agree. This warrantless searching kind of thing is there's a reason why it was in the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know, some So just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So that's big. So it's time to say, are they going to continue or not? And I think we should do that with all government laws.
I agree. There should be sunsets on everything.
Exactly.
And that way, then we have to come in. It has to be redebated.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very, very good idea.
And
but politicians don't like
time.
To do that.
It's like you're doing an audit. You're like, okay, how did it work last 5 years or so? And if not, make changes.
Yeah.
We make changes in our businesses. Why wouldn't government have to make changes based on their successes? And not so successes.
Well, we have all these entitlements, Social Security, we have Medicare, right. And those are just markers. They just, they don't even debate those.
They just keep going and going
and
going.
I think that there needs to be a time, as you mentioned, a sunset to reauthorize all of this spending.
Right.
I think it would help immensely.
It sure would.
So, Molly, I have a question for you.
Okay.
How was eighth grade for you?
Eighth grade was fine for me. I was one of the cool chicks.
Eighth grade was brutal for me. It was brutal for me.
Uh-huh.
And sitting on city council, I realized that there's a lot of politicians and bureaucrats that are actually stuck in the eighth grade girls, and they can be both guys and girls. But my gosh, I tell you what, this whole thing with Oprah and the thing at the Golden Globes the other night, apparently Ivanka Trump came out and praised Oprah for her speech. And said, and this is what Ivanka Trump said. She tweeted, "Let's all come together, women and men, and say #hashtag Time's Up." You know, I mean, I think that it was very heartfelt. Oh my gosh, this Ruth Marcus, who writes for the Washington Post, she says, "Oh yes, let's." How dare she? "For too long," Winfrey said, "women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those abusive men. But their time is up. Their time is up." I tell you what, then, you know what I did? I did a web search, a Google search for pictures of Oprah and Harvey Weinstein.
Oh,
and
I've seen a lot of those on the internet today. People are sharing that she's kissing them on the cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, you can be photographed with people you don't really realize sometimes if you're in an event. So I kind of went through there and I thought, well, maybe that's just not the case. They clearly knew each other very, very well. And so what we have going on here, Molly, I think is, there's a lot of this going on in America. First of all, virtue signaling. So Ruth Marcus and all of these Hollywood stars, they feel that they are more virtuous and that they can bring up this subject. But as she said, how dare Ivanka Trump bring something up?
Kimmy, I don't think that that's honoring our fellow sisters. I remember, after President Trump won the election, Hillary Clinton lost it. Hillary went on this tour saying women caved to men. They didn't vote for me because their men told them not to. And they just weren't with me.
Implying that women aren't smart enough to make their own decision.
Right. And her whole point was supposed to be that as a woman, there shouldn't be a glass ceiling, that she's just as good as any man. She can do it. But then why would she, as soon as she loses, go back and attack women for not voting for her? You can't have it both ways.
I would rather
honor and respect everybody, or you don't
vote on the policies. And so, in fact, when your policies don't stand up to scrutiny, then that's what you do, is you start playing fill in the blank, whatever card it is. So virtue signaling. Apparently, these women in Hollywood now are virtuous, but how dare a conservative woman, or Ivanka, I'm not sure she's really that conservative, but how dare she say anything? I'm shocked at that.
Yeah.
Secondly, the self-righteousness. I'm just, it's beyond me. And then very hypocritical. And the thing that's really going on here, Molly, is there is an effort to control the narrative, to control the message. They want to push that out to all of these young women, all the women out there, that they are virtuous, that they are self-right, or that they are right, and that they know what they're talking about. And so I want to just mention this whole thing with James Tapper and Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller is Trump's person regarding immigration, and James Tapper, who is on CNN, had Stephen on the show the other night. And so Stephen started talking about some of the things that were on his mind, and James did not want that out there. And as I was thinking about it, this is CNN, and they want to control the narrative. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was very rude, but it was very telling. Because have you ever been with some of your friends and said, there's something that's all over the news that we're very aware of, and an issue that we think is important to everybody, and say, you know, have you heard about, you know, what's going on with immigration?
Mm-hmm.
And, or Kate Steinle.
Right.
I mentioned that to some friends, the death of Kate Steinle. And they're like, no, I hadn't heard of that.
Right. Because it's not out there. And, you know, we talked the other day about Iran and the protests in Iran. And, you know, Iran controls the media and controls the media and controls the internet, shut down the social media sites recently because the protesters were using that to arrange for peaceful protest. And so that's why I think it's so important. Like, we got rid of net neutrality. I think it's important that we all have access to our different avenues for media, because if we only had a CNN or something like that, literally, like you just said, you know, the tappers of the world are going to make sure we only hear one thing, that there's no other voices out there. But we should search for truth. And truth is, it can't be changed by opinion. Truth is truth. And we've got to search for it. But that's why we do what we do, Kim, is because the media does their best in showing you one side versus the other. And there's a lot of party politics, partisan politics. And I just don't think that that's the way that it should be. And like, you know, today we're going to have Victor Mitchell on in the next segment. He's running for governor. We've invited them all on. And I wish that we would take away the R and the D from behind people's names. And I wish that Fox wasn't seen as a, you know, just a Republican group. And I wish that CNN wasn't, you know, just a Democrat group. Because I think, let's ask honest, difficult,
hard questions,
and let's get their answers and decide for ourselves. We're intelligent people. We don't need anybody to make decisions for us. And just because you win an election doesn't make you smarter than everybody else. I know a lot of elected leaders think they are, and now they can control the rest of us. But we search for truth, and we want you to, too. And that's why we're here. We're going to have Victor Mitchell on first. If you have great questions for him, call us.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516. Or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks. Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We are Sleuths for Truth, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we are lobbyists for the little guy. Because the little guy, everyday Jane and Joe, that's what really America's all about, is regular people going after their hopes and dreams.
And that's us. So that's what we care about.
That is us, for sure. And in January, the legislature is in session, and the gubernatorial candidates have been working hard. And we have Victor Mitchell in studio with us. Victor, you're running for a governor for Colorado, so welcome.
Well, thanks, Kim. Thanks, Molly. Glad to be back on your show. Hope you guys had a great new year.
We did.
We're going to enjoy the heck out of this new year.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big year. We're going to have a new governor.
That's right.
Hey, with our stock market going up and our savings account, our bank accounts growing, it is going to be a good year. If we could just get health reform passed.
But yeah.
We'll talk about
that. You just get a Republican governor in there, it would even be a better year.
I think that would be a good
thing. Not even just a Republican governor, but the best Republican
Victor Mitchell is governor. It's got a nice ring to it.
That it does, Victor Mitchell. So, Victor, we had sent you a whole bunch of subjects to talk about. And the first thing is what is your vision for Colorado? If you are elected governor, what is your vision for Colorado?
You know, the biggest thing is to bring ethical, competent, and visionary leadership back to our governorship. I mean, I'm not a politician. I'm a career entrepreneur and a family man and somebody with a deep love of Colorado. But the state is really turning hard left. We elect people that are much more of they're political more than leaders. And I think we need to start getting back to fixing things that really can make a difference in people's lives. I've been all around the state. We've done over 400 grassroots events in 59 counties. We have 42,000 Facebook supporters. We're really creating a big movement, but we've got to start fixing things. I mean, we've added so many regulations affecting small business and entrepreneurship under this current administration. You know, something like 120,000 pages of new rules and regulations.
Just here in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we've got to start really, you know, the economy works so differently than it has even just a few years ago. And we have to start bringing in entrepreneurs that know how to run things or are not indebted to special interest groups to make people's lives better.
Victor Mitchell, I love that you're saying that. Sorry, Kim. I serve on the board of the Colorado Republican Business Coalition, CRBC. And starting next Wednesday, every week, we are going to have the chairman, Susan Kochevar, on talking about our review of the legislative of all the bills, everything that applies to small business owners in Colorado. We go through, we put together a matrix. You may be familiar with this, but we're letting people know as business owners here in Colorado, is this legislation going to hurt or help small businesses? That way people can get down there and have a voice. And so I'm glad that you've mentioned right out of the bat, Victor Mitchell, that you are going to help small business owners and businesses in Colorado by getting rid of these painful, heavy regulations.
I mean, without question, my plan is actually to roll back 100,000 pages of rules and regulations.
We like it.
Whoop, whoop.
I want to bring in about a dozen people similar to myself that have a background in the private sector as entrepreneurs, as business owners, as job creators, and do a top-to-bottom review. But unlike me, the people who are going to be appointed are not going to have any aspirations to run for office, so they can be completely non-conflicted and do the right thing. I mean, we look at so many laws that get passed, and they're often really just lobbyists are pushing many of these laws, and they're really, you know, basically stifling competition, keeping prices artificially high. And they're not really serving a productive purpose. We need to, most especially our young people, we want to see them create their own businesses. There was a recent study done here in Colorado where young people under 30 prefer to work in government jobs than they did in the private sector. And that's a dangerous precedent. We want to really reverse that. We want to really encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship and small business formation again.
Well, and when you mention the economy, and I think we'll talk a bit about healthcare over here because women care deeply about healthcare. But I think even more so what we're hearing is the economy to be able to do the things for their children, for their families. And this economy looks like it's starting to rock and roll here on a national basis. But here in Colorado, there still seems to be a heavy hand on the economy. And we had Amy Oliver Cook on yesterday, and she had was talking about two of the gubernatorial candidates on the Democrat side. And actually, I think all of them are talking about 100% renewable energy by 2040 for Colorado. That's going to really hurt our economy.
Oh, so many things. And they want to wipe out our whole oil and gas industry, which
is a 20. Can you believe that?
No, you really can't. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, I don't even know if they're any more the Democratic Party. It sounds like they're the Socialist Party. I mean, they want to command and control government. And that's a $26 billion industry here in Colorado. It's over 200,000 jobs here in Colorado. It's some of these are the highest paying jobs in our state. And I believe in an all in the above approach when it comes to energy. I mean, we all should promote renewables, but not necessarily at the expense of fossil fuels. We should let the market function and whatever can be the least expensive alternative that's efficient, that should flourish in the market. I mean, if If renewables are so wonderful, why do we have to give them so many subsidies?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Solyndra got a lot of subsidies under former President Obama, and that failed quickly, went into bankruptcy, and we never saw that money again. That's our money, but you're right. You know, Amy Oliver, when she was on yesterday, she said that this new plan, if we're going to get to 100% renewables by 2040, it's going to cost each person in Colorado over $8,000 towards that. I know so many people that are really, really excited about the market going up, the new job opportunities out there. I mean, we are at an all-time low for unemployment and food stamp use and all of this. And so why right now in Colorado with, you know, these two Democratic gubernatorial candidates, Polis and Johnston, say we think it's time to go ahead and raise taxes and get rid of jobs and get rid of fossil fuels in Colorado? It just seems crazy to me.
Well, their agenda is pretty radical. They want single-payer health. They want to wipe out the taxpayer bill of rights. They want to, you know, they basically want mandates to tell you what you can buy. We now have actually regulations in Denver that if you build a new home or remodel a new home, you have to retrofit it with an electric car outlet. Only about 2% of Denverites actually own electric cars yet.
You know, and those are highly subsidized to purchase
one. Of course. So every single homeowner now that wants to buy a new home in Denver or scrape and rebuild, they're going to be
required.
They don't have a choice.
Have
it. That's correct.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many regulations like that are just being pushed by special interest groups that are not necessarily in the interest of the people. But I want to touch too about your unemployment. I've been all around the state. I was actually just got back last night from Silverton. I was in Pagosa Springs yesterday afternoon. There is definitely a deep rural and urban divide when it comes to how our economy is functioning. I mean, I can tell you that in our rural communities, they need help. I mean, we've heard a lot about Amazon. I don't know if you've been following the story about Amazon. Our current governor is talking about giving them up to $5 billion. I think this is just terrible. I mean, we shouldn't give them one penny.
They should pay us to come here. Everybody wants to be in Colorado.
Well, I think if they want to come here, we should talk to them about our quality of life, our highly educated workforce, our geographic central location. If we want to work with community colleges and have them customize certain worker training programs, that makes a lot of sense. But this is the richest company in the world, and he's the richest man now in the world. And why would, I mean, we need to have our economic development incentives going towards small and medium-sized employers, quality employers, you know, employers with 20 to 100 employees that would open up in some of our rural, economically challenged communities around our state.
You know, Victor, you bring up a point because I have been watching this whole Amazon thing and serving on city council. As I looked at economic development, these dollars, it actually allows politicians and bureaucrats to pick winners and losers. And so why is it okay that the big guy like Amazon gets $5 billion to come to Colorado, but the little guy who has the pizza joint over here is paying business personal property tax on his ovens, on his tables, on his chairs? The other thing that we have to think about here is if we encourage Amazon to come here and give him $5 billion, then the next thing you know, politicians and bureaucrats are wringing their hands saying, oh, there's so much congestion. Our roads and bridges, the education system, we have too many people. Well, when you start to give money to one person to bring them in, there's all of these other ramifications. I think free market.
Absolutely. And you know, my plan is not one penny to Amazon or any other like companies. And not that they're a bad company. It's just that we shouldn't, it's not a company that needs our money. I mean, it's a rounding error to them. I mean, that we need to get, if we're going to have economic development incentives, we should be thinking about high-tech manufacturers. We should think about distribution companies that could go into communities that really could provide an extra 20 or 50 or 100 new jobs, high-quality jobs. Companies with great histories of treating their employees, companies that know how to operate either in, you know, rural communities, Western Slope communities. That's really where we need to be focused for economic development incentives. But we've got it all wrong. I mean, the problem is we elect too many politicians and too few leaders.
And a lot of people that haven't been in business. I really think that great economic development would be what you mentioned is lowering or getting rid of a lot of these rules and regulations and lowering taxes so everybody has the opportunity to put more money into their businesses. So, so let's go ahead, Molly.
So we made a comment, and this all kind of ties together. But Victor Mitchell, let's go here next. You made a point about single payer health care, and I think you know we're talking about single payer pretty much everything. With when the big government guys come in and they want us all to have renewable energy, and everybody's got to pay a whole bunch of money, and everybody's got to pay a bunch of money towards everything, basically. But what about single payer health care here in Colorado? People are hurting. I mean, people are hurting. Our prices skyrocketed for health insurance. Our deductibles are huge. Our doctors are getting out of the industry. What do you propose as you're running for governor that we do about our health care problems?
I'm so glad you asked. I mean, a completely new approach entirely. And we've had, under this administration, a $650 million increase in Medicaid expansion. About one in four Coloradans today are on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. I mean, it's low quality. It's ration care. My plan is to get us entirely out of the Medicaid expansion, provide block grants to entrepreneurial nurse practitioner clinics, physician assistant clinics, mental health clinics, where entrepreneurs, mental health professionals would apply to the state of Colorado. There'd be a commission. The state would, we would look at their array of services they'd be providing, and the state, if approved this, would provide up to 50% of their annual operating budget. At the end of the year, they'd have to come back. There'd be zero-cost budgeting. There'd be peer-to-peer reviews to see how well they performed. And if they did well enough, then we would offer the following year, another 50% of their annual operating budget. But everything would have to be done with transparency and pricing. So what does that mean exactly?
I like that.
Anywhere you go and any service provider in our state, they have to tell you exactly what things are going to cost. I mean, we have tremendous disparities if you want to get an MRI done or common procedures done. And my vision is for primary care to be offered to any Coloradan, rich or poor, urban or rural, without the need for insurance, where we get insurance going back to its fundamental foundations of specialty care and long-term chronic illness, emergency services. That's really what health insurance should be geared towards.
Well, I agree with you on that. We just talked about this earlier this week. I believe it's in Britain that, you know, their universal healthcare system is crashing. I mean, they've canceled 50,000 surgeries in the past couple of weeks. They are so undermanned and they have so much demand that they are sending taxis rather than ambulances to pick people up because they just can't cover the people. So now they're like, oh, well, if you smoke or you're obese or what have you, then you're not getting the care first. That's what happens when we have universal health care, single payer health care. You can't provide everything to everybody, and not everybody needs everything. Let us pay for what we need and seek out our doctors and post the prices. Let us negotiate it. I think it's a great deal. So I'm glad that you're looking at that in Colorado as well, Victor Mitchell.
Victor, we're going to be going to break. Before we do, how can people get more information about you? And then we will be having you on in the next segment as well.
Oh, that'd be great. You can go to my website at vicforgov. That's VIC, the number 4GOV.com, or follow us on Facebook at /vicforgov. And we have over 42,000 Facebook supporters. We list all of our events. Most of our events are free. So we're doing free meet and greets all around the state. And I look forward to some checking us out.
I know you've been working very hard. You've been all
it's
over the
calling.
State.
It's a calling. I mean, I think if you want to change the world and you want to make a big difference in people's lives, the state has been so generous to me and my family.
Okay, this is the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We have gubernatorial candidate Victor Mitchell in studio with us. We're going to break. We'll be right back.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
Hello, friends. This is Jeff Hunt, director of the Centennial Institute, and I am so excited for the events we're hosting in 2018. You know, our mission is to provide a bold, conservative voice in Colorado. We host a lot of events, inviting the country's top conservative leaders to our state. This includes the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom on January 29th at Colorado Christian University. In February, we'll be hosting a panel discussion with Colorado State Treasurer candidates, as well as an event with the author of George Washington's Sacred Fire about the faith of George Washington. In April, we're hosting Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation, one of the top thinkers on transgender issues. I hope you'll join us for these important events. You can find more details about these events and other events we're hosting at centennial.events. That's centennial.events. In 2018, let's usher in a conservative revolution in Colorado.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. I'm Kim.
I'm Molly.
And we have Victor Mitchell in studio with us. He is running for governor. And so, Molly, we are, in the spirit of Nancy Drew, we are sleuths for truth, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we are lobbyists for the little guys. So, Victor, I got to back up. I was just thinking about what you were saying about health care. And I was kind of like hearing, this is too good to be true. And I'm thinking, are people getting this for free? I mean, I think it's important for everybody to have some skin in the game, even if it's just $5, because currently on Medicaid, a lot of people don't have to pay for anything. So I think I'm needing some clarification.
Oh, absolutely. The entrepreneurial nurse practitioner clinics, let me share one story with you. There's a clinic in rural Virginia today that doesn't take any insurance whatsoever. Actually, they're run entirely with female nurse practitioners. They serviced this past year 25,000 people on $1.5 million budget. They charge $10 per visit. They've negotiated directly with pharmaceutical companies, so they give you a $4 prescription drug voucher. They do vertically integrated primary care, so they're not just doing diagnostics. They're doing things like mammograms and PET scans and colonoscopies and wellness and mental health screening. That's just one example of an entrepreneurial nurse practitioner clinic model that's outside of, you know, the large hospital groups, outside of the Medicaid model. To put that in some reference for your listeners, we visited Medicaid providers, several of them around the state. And the all-in cost today for a Medicaid provider is about $480 per patient visit. The nurse practitioner model that's being done, and for example, take the Health Wagon in rural Virginia, is all-in at about $60 per patient visit. In other words, the Medicaid models are 8 times more expensive or 1/8 as efficient. And that's just one example. That's why these entrepreneurial type of concepts – no governor and no elected official is going to have all the answers. That's why we got to let the market come forward. You're going to have nurse practitioners, something we want to service this part of the market, and this is how many patients we're going to service. This is going to be our pricing model. And the state would have a review committee of a dozen or so of people that are knowledgeable in this area, and they would then review that budget, and if they approved it, they would get up to half of their annual operating costs reimbursed. So there would always be skin in the game. Some will be a fee-based model. Some will be a per-visit model. This could also work in mental health clinics, which are very different than primary care, because primary care is generally very predictable. Mental health is just the opposite. I mean, every patient who needs mental health generally needs a unique patient plan. So these are the types of things that we can do. But when you look at the numbers of how much money is being wasted in our state through Medicaid expansion, and it's 8 times more expensive than a nurse practitioner model, we have to think about things differently.
And could we then add on some kind of a catastrophic policy or something for people that would be not very expensive so that they are totally covered then? But I think that once people don't have any skin in the game, when they don't have to pay anything, I think that's where we get into these out-of-control costs.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no one has ever talked. And this is not going to supplement insurance. This is primary care. There's really no reason why you should need insurance for basic primary care. Insurance should be used for really things that are really serious, like, yep, God forbid, cancer or diabetes, mm-hmm, or you have a long-term illness. You're on disability. Those types of things, generally speaking, you're going to need more of a comprehensive plan. But I also think it also goes back to transparency and pricing. I got to share this one very quick story with your listeners. We were in Rocky Ford recently. I don't know if you know, your listeners know, that's the cantaloupe capital of Colorado.
Sure, absolutely.
Great place, beautiful place. So we met this wonderful couple who are farmers, and the wife came up after me and she said, you know, I heard about your nurse practitioner model. Sounds very, very interesting. We only have one rural hospital in our community. And we have an $11,000. My husband and I have insurance, like most Coloradans, but they can't meet their deductible. They haven't. In this case, they have an $11,000 deductible.
Wow. Yep.
So they said, you know, my husband needs a procedure done. It's going to cost $2,500. We can't afford it. We don't have the $2,500. So my wife and I, literally the next day, we got on the phone. We called Dry Creek Imaging here in Englewood. They did the identical procedure for $600. That's the power of transparency and pricing.
I like that.
I mean, the fact
Mitchell.
That we can't shop around and know in real time what things are going to cost for the identical procedure could be have a price disparity of four times as expensive in our rural communities.
Wow.
Well, choice and transparency obviously helps the little guy and gal. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We're talking with gubernatorial candidate Victor Mitchell. And Victor, we're doing a lightning round because we only have you
Sounds
for so
great.
Much time. Let's talk sanctuary cities, if you don't mind. We're going to have next on with us in the next segment. The executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about this. I was reading an article today about sanctuary cities and President Trump's, you know, he has that executive order out saying that if you're applying for these burn justice assistance programs, that warning, violation of federal law, we may force you to repay funds. Denver's on the list. Denver got these funds. I think in 2016, we got $425,590, and that's only a portion of the entire 16 million of 29 sanctuary jurisdictions. What do you think going forward Colorado would look like with sanctuary cities, with or without you as governor?
Well, as governors, you should be clear, you know, the governor, we can't stop a city like Denver or a city like Boulder from being sanctuary cities. But as a governor, what I can do is I can cut off their funding. And I plan to do just that through the general fund. I mean, kidding aside, we can't have a state in which, you know, we're going to enforce laws that we like and we're going to disregard laws that we don't. I mean, that's how you have create anarchy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a matter of security. I mean, you can't have criminal aliens in our state that get arrested and they get released back into our society. I mean, they have to be deported. We have to cooperate with ICE. We can't have this notion that they're going to, you know, disregard the rule of law. I think President Trump deserves a great amount of respect and recognition for what he's trying to do with comprehensive immigration reform. And I think it's pretty terrible that the Democrats, you know, won't do a quid pro quo for dealing with the DACA situation in return for border security funding. I mean, it just doesn't. It seems like it's a rational, common sense solution that should be go forward. Yet the Democrats are fighting tooth and nail for any type of border security. They just generally want full open borders. They don't really even want a country.
Yeah. Well, if you are an elected official, your goal is to protect the people. At least that's what you promise.
At least I think you swear on the Constitution.
You swear
on what you say you're going to do.
And there's not borders around every single city in Colorado. So if illegals are running free, criminal aliens are running free in Denver, they're free to go to Aurora, to anywhere else. So good for you. Thank you. Last question for me, Victor Mitchell. I saw on your Facebook page, I know you did not vote for President Trump. I don't know if you were a never Trumper. But I see that you were giving him some kudos for getting rid of some regulations. So tell us what you think about how President Trump's doing so far.
I think he's doing a lot of good things. I mean, I can't stand his tweeting, but I think the tax reform is a home run. I think it's going to help many people in Colorado, most especially business owners. I think he's doing terrific things on getting rid of a great deal amount of regulations. I think his judicial appointments have been outstanding, most especially our new Supreme Court justice here from Colorado. So, I mean, he's doing a lot of good things. I mean, his temperament and style are different than mine. I did not vote for Trump. I'm the only Republican that didn't vote. It's the first time in my life I didn't vote for a Republican. I voted for a third-party candidate. But I'm not a politician. I think he should be given recognition. We want him to be successful. I support the president when he gets it right. And I think he's been doing a lot of good things.
Well, I appreciate that honesty in you. I really like that, Victor. And I, you know, people said they didn't want a businessman to become president. They didn't think he'd do a good job. But now that I'm looking, I'm like, wow. I mean, J.P. Morgan's CEO yesterday came out and said he didn't vote for Trump. He said he won't make it more than one. I don't know if he voted. He said he won't make it past one term. But we're probably going to see 4% or more growth this year, and that's awesome. And
that'd be amazing.
I think business owners like you and us, Kim and I, here sitting here looking at what's going on, saying, you know what, nobody's perfect, and there are some quirks there that we kind of wish weren't there, and they aren't very politically correct. But you know what, if you repeal these regulations that are holding down business owners and job creators, and you get rid of these crazy taxes, and you get rid of the individual mandate on health care, and you give more power back to the states, then who cares what anybody else does?
That's exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the next governor is going to deal with what's really going on in Colorado. Donald Trump is a non-factor in fixing our roads and infrastructure in Colorado. He's not going to fix our health care in Colorado. He's certainly not. You know, we talk about a low unemployment rate in Colorado, but that's about 3 million people out of about 6.2 million in our state. Mm-hmm. So we have about 3 million gainfully employed today in Colorado. Many of them don't have earning power. We've got serious challenges in our state, whether it's, you know, improving vocational trades in our public schools, dealing with our high, we're one of the most expensive places in the country to send a kid to college. Many of our kids are graduating with enormous student debts, taking 5 years to graduate. They're not getting the degrees that are desperately needed, our engineering and science and technology type degrees. So we have serious challenges. And no offense, no affront to Donald Trump. These have to be fixed by our next governor.
Absolutely. We've only got another minute, but we may need to hold you over for one more, because we didn't talk about the roads. What's your solution for the roads as people are sitting in traffic right now?
Oh, I think that, you know, I put together a plan actually to get $2 billion of new funding directly into roads and infrastructure without increasing taxes or fees.
So where would that come from, Victor?
So very specifically, we're going to change, we're going to reform CDOT entirely. I'm going to bring an outsider, somebody with a deep amount of relevant industry experience in to run CDOT, not a bureaucrat like we currently have, and limit their overhead to no more than 20% will go to general administrative expenses. Today it's about 70%, or about $700 million could alone be immediately funded to contractors if we just reformed it. We'll talk more about it after the break.
Okay,
this is the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson, and we have Victor Mitchell in studio. And what is your website, Victor?
VicForGov.com, V-I-C, the number 4, G-O-V.com.
Great, thank you.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here's Helen Kriebel.
Does better nutrition have to mean fewer freedoms? Most of us are concerned when we hear of children not getting the nourishment they need. So it's understandable that we've adopted healthy standards for the food served in our schools. But if we first look through the lens of liberty, we would let parents decide what's best for their kids. Recent stories about school food police taking lovingly packed lunches away from children and forcing them to eat the school's pre-selected and mass-produced meals are shocking. Yet we tend to shrug these incidents off and do nothing about it. That is not the American way. Our nation is based on the idea that ordinary people can govern themselves and do not need the government to dictate such mundane details as what's for lunch.
The Lens of Liberty is brought to you by the Vernon K. Kriebel Foundation.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks Molly and Kim personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you. Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks. This is Molly Vogt and Kim Munson, and we are Sleuths for Truth. And we have in studio with us gubernatorial candidate Victor Mitchell. We're talking about top issues on his radar. Then we're going to talk about immigration. But real quick, shout out to Evan, Your IT Guy. EvanYourITGuy.com is one of our sponsors, and they have come up with the perfect niche to help people starting a new business. Or if you're sitting at home and you've got a problem with your computer, you don't want it. You don't have the money probably to.
They're IT professionals.
Have the money to hire an entire IT team to help us with our brand new businesses. And who has the time to take your computer if you've got a problem down to a shop, leave it with your password, you've got some stranger looking through your stuff, you're without your emails? No. Call EvanYourITGuy.com. They will remotely get on your computer. They will fix it while you're watching it. It's all recorded, so you can do it yourself next time.
Well, not me, but
well, most. And but if you tell them that the AmeriChicks sent you, EvanYourITGuy.com will give you your first session for free.
Well, I have used them and I highly recommend them. They're awesome. EvanYourITGuy.com. So with that, Victor, 1 minute, because we have Mark Corian on the line. We want to talk with him about DACA. So very quickly, just a clarification regarding infrastructure.
So as I said earlier, I want to reform CDOT and limit their overhead to no more than 20%. That alone would free up about $700 million to go directly to contractors. In addition to that, I want to deploy all their cash and cash equivalents that's currently on their balance sheet, which is close to $1 billion on the last estimate. So that would also increase the funding by about $1.7 billion directly to contractors. In addition to that, I want to change something in the Legislative Audit Committee and change that to performance-based auditing, which to look for ways to drive out costs and waste in our state government. If we can save 3 to 4% by changing from financial audits to performance auditing, that's another potential $1 billion that could be put into higher pay to our teachers and more money to infrastructure. But make no mistake about it, the next governor is going to have very serious things to deal with about infrastructure. We're going to have to deal with autonomous driving. We're going to have to think about worker retraining for many people that are going to be displaced mm-hmm. due to autonomous driving. There's going to be a lot more technology involved in modernizing our infrastructure. So these are big items.
We're going to have you back to talk about these self-driving cars because I have some opinions about that. So, hey, Victor Mitchell, thank you so much. And again, what is your website?
VicForGov.com. Love being on your show. Congratulations to all your success and look forward to talking to you guys again.
Thank you so much, thanks, Victor Mitchell. We're going to jump right over to Mark Krikorian. He is with the Washington, D.C. based independent nonpartisan research organization, Center for Immigration Studies. And we've got some big questions for you. Mark, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, we're going to be running out of time. It's going to be quick. So, DACA, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that meeting yesterday, I don't know how many people watched it, but it was a remarkable thing where they televised the meeting, hour of a meeting between the president and Republican and Democratic congressmen. And a lot of what the president was saying was kind of worrying because he seemed to basically be agreeing with everybody he was talking to, including the Democrats, and was talking about comprehensive immigration reform and all kinds of things. I mean, I was worried about it, but this kind of thing has happened before, and it doesn't actually mean what it doesn't suggest what the president is actually going to do. It's just the way he seems to run meetings. And the good sign was that today the White House sent out its talking points on DACA and said it has to have funding for the wall, it has to have an end to chain migration and an end to the visa lottery, in addition to giving permanent status, some kind of regular legal amnesty to the people who have DACA. I'm not wild about the amnesty part, but if we can get those other elements, then frankly, it's worth taking the risk on the amnesty because it's 750,000 people. They grew up here, most of them, and they signed up for this Obama program, DACA, which is illegal, but they didn't know that. They didn't break the law. Obama did. They signed up for the thing. I think there's a case to make to give those people a legal amnesty if we can get these important, very important, significant things that only Congress can do. Administration can't do those things on its own.
Mark Krikorian, my understanding was that actually there's kind of a DACA 1 and there's a DACA 2. There's the DACA 1 of we're talking about kids that were brought over here, you know, by their parents, kids that were, you know, small children.
I mean, they're not kids anymore, but they were kids when they were brought over.
Yeah. But then what about all of these unaccompanied minors that came in the last couple of years under Obama? And some of them, they said they were teenagers, but clearly some of those guys have been shaving for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole separate thing that they're not getting into. I mean, there were lots. There were some kids brought over. They're calling them unaccompanied minors, but a lot of them, almost none of them are unaccompanied. They're illegal immigrant relatives in the United States paid smugglers to bring them here. That's what it was about. And some of them, as you suggest, actually came as adults. They're not kids. They're 18 and over. Like you said, they've been shaving. Some of them have jobs. But they pretended, they lied about their age. And under Obama, nobody was asking a lot of questions. I actually spoke to a mayor of a town in Massachusetts. We had her on a panel discussion couple of years ago. She said they sent out some truant officers for people that were supposed to be in school. One of them went to knock on the door and said, you know, where is such and such person at school? And the woman answering the door said, school? He's at work. What are you talking about? These were grown men in their 20s who basically lied, and nobody really questioned the fact that they were, you know, what age they were, and they basically let them go into the United States.
So are we going to be able to split those out, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but that's a separate thing. This, none of the legislation we're talking about would be, you know, giving them amnesty. I mean, what we have to do is process those people because they were all given court dates.
okay.
for immigration court. It's just that they were given dates 3 years, 4 years in the future.
Uh-huh.
And so we need to get moving on those, processing those people and sending them back if appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And Mark Krikorian, what about the difference between saying we're going to actually pay for a border wall or just more border security? Do you think it's really important to have an actual wall?
I'm less convinced of that than the president, quite frankly. There are some places we need real wall. There's other places, and the president himself has said this, that we don't need it everywhere just because of the terrain. I think there's other measures other than the border security that's actually probably more important, more bang for the buck anyway, specifically E-Verify,
mm-hmm.
free online system. It exists now. My center has used it for years. So when you hire somebody, collect their info for Social Security and IRS, which you have to do anyway. You just check online and make sure that it's real, that the number's real, it matches their name. That exists. About half of new hires are already going through this, but only Congress can make it mandatory for all new hires. It was the single most important step in reducing and weakening the job magnet that pulls people in, and it would apply to any illegal immigrant, not just those who jump across the border. And remember, half or more of today's illegal immigrants who are coming in today come in legally on a visa,
yep.
and then just never leave. And the border wall doesn't affect them. That's the problem.
Yep. And that kind of visa overstay fraud that you talk about, Mark, is the 9/11 terrorist. Many of those guys actually were here on overstayed illegal visas. Last question.
I mean, they all came in with visas. Mm-hmm. A bunch of them had already overstayed. And frankly, all of them were illegal aliens because they said on their visa applications, they didn't say they were coming here to commit terrorism. And so by lying on their visa applications, that turned them all into illegal aliens.
Right, right. Okay, last question for you, Mark Krikorian. President Trump said that he is going to terminate the temporary protected status, TPS, for about 200,000 Salvadorian illegal aliens. No longer is their country worried about the conditions they were in when they came here, when we took them in. What are your thoughts on that?
What this is, TPS, it's called temporary protected status, is for illegal immigrants who are lucky enough to be in the United States when natural disaster hits their home country. And these people have been here since 2001 when there was an earthquake. And we let them, we just keep renewing it every 18 months. The program needs to end. The whole idea needs to end so presidents can't do this in the future. The administration gave these Salvadorans more than a year and a half after, you know, then winding up the program, but only a year and a half from now. It was essential to do this because there's nothing, unfortunately, nothing temporary about temporary protected status. My joke is there's nothing as permanent as temporary protected status.
Exactly. You're right on. Let's get the government to enforce all laws on all people equally. How about that? No workarounds.
Yeah. So,
shocking idea.
Yeah. Mark Krikorian, you guys send out on a pretty regular basis some good emails. How can people get more information about you and get on your email list?
We're online at CIS.org, at Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. And I'm on Twitter if people like sarcasm and snark. My Twitter handle is Mark S. as in Stephen, Mark S. Krikorian.
Okay, very good. And do you think we're going to get this fixed? I mean, are you encouraged or are you pessimistic? What do you think?
I'm getting more pessimistic about the DACA thing. I think the reason a lot of congressmen are so urgently interested in doing this is that starting in March, these DACA people's work permits start expiring. Not all of them at once, but it'll take 2 years, but they start expiring in March. And, I think the difference is too big. I think the minimum of what the president will accept is more than the Democrats are willing to go for. So, you know, I'm not going to bet my car on this, but I would bet a cup of coffee that March is going to come and go and there isn't going to be any legislation signed by the president.
So what will happen then?
They'll lose their work permits and they'll go back to being illegal aliens that they were before they got DACA. I'm not seeing this as a poison pill, as a thing to torpedo. I'm actually for giving these guys amnesty. They're a unique, small slice that's different from any other part of the illegal population. But we need to get these important reforms as part of the deal. And if we get those, the amnesty part will be worth it because it's small enough and the people are sympathetic enough and the changes we would get are important enough that it's worth doing, but only if we get those changes. If we do what the Democrats want and Lindsey Graham and some other people like that, just give them amnesty and that's it, no strings attached. That's a bad deal.
Very bad deal. Okay.
Yeah, we're just going to end up talking about this all over again 5 years from now.
Okay. Well, Mark Krikorian, thank you so much. We're going to get you back on. Great, great segment. We really appreciate it.
Molly, thanks, Mark.
We want to give a shout out to all of our Growing Our Brand partners, Predovich & Company for all of your accounting, bookkeeping, and tax needs. Karen Levine, she is an award-winning REMAX realtor. Yanni's at the Landmark. They have the best lamb chops in town.
And you, Rose.
Yeah. Home Mortgage Alliance, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook. Alliance Insurance Services, Jeremy McCallum. Evan, your IT guy, and the Centennial Institute.
Yes. Thank you to everybody.
You bet. And our quote today is Thomas Jefferson. He says, "The boisterous sea of liberty is never without a wave."
Amen to that. This is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim signing off. We'll see you here tomorrow, 5 p.m. and every Monday to Friday. Have a good night.